From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made when a restaurant reviewer took a trip to the Pittsford Pub. It's a restaurant that has no problem filling seats, but the reviewer, Vince Press, was not necessarily impressed with what he found there. In his review, Press writes, quote, "The Pittsford Pub could be so much more. I get you're making money. I know there are backsides on the bar stools and the covers are strong, but Guy Fieri won't set foot in the place until things get more creative, sourcing is prioritized, and a whole lot more scratch-made sauces and stocks show up," end quote. And can we be blunt for a moment? In large cities, candid restaurant reviews are common. Harsh criticism is viewed as an opportunity to learn and grow. But in mid-sized markets, things are a little bit more insular. Newspapers have been known to scrap negative reviews so as not to inflame business owners or readers. It's hard to be critical, in other words. Not for Vince. So where can you find his very direct commentary on the local food scene? It is just one component to a newly revamped enterprise called the Rochester Food Net. The online publication is a hub for, yes, reviews, but also feature stories, podcasts, blogs, interviews, and more. After all, Western New York has a growing food scene, and the founders of the Food Net want to be all over it, the good, the bad, even if the barely edible. Why not? Let's talk about everything associated with the relaunched Food Net and what it will take to succeed for them. Our guests include the man who used to be known as the chef de cuisine. He's the founder, and my notes say, if they are accurate, the billionaire philanthropist funder. That's Adam Wilcox.
Yeah, you got the funder part right.
The funder.
Funder.
The funder.
I am the funder.
The funder. Thanks for being here. It's nice to have you here.
Thanks. It's
also
good
with
to be
us
here.
Is Vince Press. And you know, sort of to be clear here, Vince, as a freelance food and drink writer, you and I have talked for several years now about the fact that you think direct criticism, not sort of gratuitous criticism, but honest criticism can lift up a food scene and get it to the next level. Fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And chefs and owners have told me that as well.
Well, we're going to talk about the many places you've already put your pen to review for the Food Net this hour. Chris Clemens is here. He's a contributor for the Rochester Food Net. He, of course, the man behind Exploring Upstate and a man with a lot of good advice for people on places to go and things to visit. So it's great to have you back here. Thanks for being here.
Yeah, it's great to be here. Thanks.
And with us, as well as Karen Cross-Smith, who is a cooking contributor and a woman who's already made me feel bad about my own cookie creations.
I'm sorry about that, Evan. Yeah.
We're going to talk about butter and what she had for readers in this month. But to be clear, Adam Wilcox, we could have filled many, many more seats. You got a lot of people associated with this relaunch. Tell me a little bit about that.
I do. I guess going back, I'll try to keep this brief, partly because my voice may give out. But 10 years ago, I went into business for myself because I didn't like working for other people. And for those of you out there who are thinking about going into business for yourself for that reason, that is not a sufficient reason to go into business for yourself. And I flailed around and I did a bunch of things. One of the things I did was the RochesterFoodNet.com, largely with this guy, Jim Barbero, who's a local graphic artist. And Jim was my buddy in that, and Karen came along because I'd known her forever. And I was thinking, you know, how do I characterize Karen? If my mother gave me my love of all things food, Karen taught me pretty much everything I know about cooking. We've been making meals together for, 30 years?
30 years.
Hmm. And I'm still trying to bring my game up to her level. Not there yet. Also, Michael Warren Thomas, who I'm sure you know, Evan.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's just an amazing person in the local food and beverage scene, was part of that. And we struggled. It was 10 years ago, and Twitter wasn't what it is. Facebook isn't what it is. Making something go viral was very difficult. We were making videos, and I think they were pretty good. They were kind of fun and entertaining. But it was very hard to get any traction, and it was very hard to monetize, which I, at the time, kind of needed to do because it was part of my business life. So after a while, it went by the wayside in the sense that it became less active. It was still out there, but we weren't contributing really anymore. Then what happened? A couple years ago, I met a bunch of these people, these other people. I met Vince, I met Chris, I met the other Chris Lindstrom, who does the Food About Town podcast. Lynn Phillips, who deserves a shout out here, Sriracha says. Amanda Antinor. I'm not forgetting anyone, am I?
I've got a long list, and I'll make sure everyone reads every name because they're going to be very upset if you miss anybody. But there's a lot.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
So what I suggested after meeting all these people and really being energized by them, I've kind of taken a bit of a life strategy of trying to surround myself with younger people who have energy and intelligence. And I find that they know things I don't know, and they give me energy. And here was this group of younger than me. I mean, you guys may not feel like young people, but to me, you're young people. Very smart, very energetic, bringing ideas that I hadn't thought of to the table. And I thought, well, let's start going to lunch once a month. The idea was noodles. Yeah. And what was the first one?
Ming? So it was actually, it was Ming's, and it was exactly to the minute 2 years ago.
Wow.
It was this date.
That is a great
and, and it was the new, yeah, I looked it up
a
couple days ago. We didn't plan it, but when I knew that we were going to be on the show, I started looking back. I thought, how did this all start? Like, how did the conversation begin? And I went, oh my God, it's the same date. So exactly to the minute 2 years ago, we were sitting down at Ming's, and it started with, Adam has a great relationship with the family behind Ming's, but we didn't order. We just sat down and they started bringing food and more food and more food. And there was such a celebration of culture and food there that it was tough to say, let's not do this again. Like, we had to want to do it again.
Right. And there was kind of a, for me, there was a bit of a crackle in the air, you know, of energy. And we kept having these lunches and they were always fun. We found a lot of common ground. We found a lot of disagreement that was productive. You know, when we don't agree about things, it's a good thing with this bunch of people. You know, there's different kinds of disagreement. There's disagreement that is ugly and there's disagreement that's productive. And I think one of the things that's good about this group is we disagree well. We can get into different approaches that people have later on. And then about a year ago, you know, I don't know, I was sitting around one day and I was thinking, boy, what if this bunch of people relaunched Rochester Food Net? Huh. That could be cool. How do I talk them into that without any money? And you know, several of us have written for the DNC, and the DNC has had, you know, budget cuts. And my experience with the DNC was very good. They treated me really well, and I enjoyed my time with them. But a couple of people weren't working much for the DNC anymore, Vince, Amanda, and myself. And I brought it up over lunch, right? Mm-hmm. And for some reason, y'all said yes.
How does that pitch go? You know, the DNC's not paying you. You know what I could do to not pay you?
I cannot pay you, too. But at least with me, it'll be fun. That was basically the pitch, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I can tell you the way that I received the pitch was, here's an opportunity for a bunch of people who maybe normally would not come together. I mean, I know that I have things in common with all these folks. Adam and I both like music. Vince and I both like cigars. We have things in common. But one of the things that has always brought all of us together is food and the culture that surrounds food. And all of us love to celebrate that and celebrate it together. And here was an opportunity for us to do something that was 100% creative that we were in charge of. I was talking before the mics were on. Sometimes it's really difficult to write for other people. You pitch an idea to an editor. The editor takes it to an editorial committee. The editorial committee goes, oh, well, maybe we can do that. Maybe have them write this. And then they come back to me and say, your creative idea is okay, but your creative idea needs to do all this instead. And like weeks later, I don't really want to do it anymore. And then like I write it anyway, and they say, here's your $25. Right? So
you got 25 bucks?
Yeah, exactly.
I can feel the passion just dripping.
Right. So the passion, I think, for this project is, if I go to Adam and I say, hey, man, I've got this idea that I want to write about because I find it interesting, he goes, yeah, do whatever you want.
Yeah, and my feeling is that interesting is interesting. So, yeah. You know, as long as one of us, someone, can make an argument that this fits on Rochester Food Net, I'm good with it, as long as it's good and interesting content.
Actually, I think that's really smart because, you know, just sort of as an observation of as a consumer of this kind of media, I've seen the strictures that come, and by the way, there's nothing wrong with editors, and everybody wants good editors.
No,
and,
of course.
You know, in publications, etc. But I think what Chris is talking about is a process that can become a little predictable, formulaic.
Sure.
And some of the biggest breakthroughs in the last decade, if one of the stories of this decade, are the kinds of breakthroughs in creative content of which there were essentially no rules, and someone who would have stopped it early in the process if only they could have, but it didn't, and now Serial was a podcast, and now serialized podcasts exploded, and podcasts in general. Well, will anybody listen to more than 10, 15 minutes? Well, I guess, and Joe Rogan Show with millions of listens, they listen to 3 hours. I don't know who these people are, but there's millions of them. And so when you kind of throw away the rules and you say, we're just going to do what we're passionate about, you know you're going to get some misses, but you're going to get some hits. And so you get sort of a lower floor and a higher ceiling. And the higher ceiling is fascinating to see what you can do podcast-wise, feature writing, whatever you want to do. I think that's a great idea.
And nobody remembers the low floor stuff anyway. It just passes into the dustbin of forgotten
memory. It doesn't
memory.
Matter. Everybody's like, why be afraid if there's a swing and a miss? I think that's really lovely. By the way, what we're talking about now, you can find online now where?
RochesterFoodNet.com.
RochesterFoodNet.com. It's there.
And we're also on Facebook, RochesterFoodNet.com on Facebook. And we're also on Instagram, RochesterFoodNet.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But can I just ask all of you briefly, and then we're going to kind of dig into your individual content already, which I think is already interesting. I'd love to know what you describe as the goal. If you bump into someone who's never heard of Rochester Food Net, and you go, oh, well, here's what we're trying to do. And the reason I ask is, you know, when I think about especially the conversations Vince and I have had in recent years about the way good food writing, whether it's criticism or otherwise, can elevate a city or a region, a Finger Lakes region, a Western New York. You know, we've had a couple of conversations that I remember on this show in the last couple of summers. We do this thing, we call it the Summer of Food. We do a bunch of conversations about food all throughout the summer. And I always enjoy it. But the ones that stand out to me, we had one conversation where we asked, what is Rochester's food identity? And it was a really interesting conversation about whether we have a food identity, and if we do, what it is. And then we also asked, what does it take for a Rochester or any city or region to become the next? And I picked Charleston, South Carolina, because Charleston, South Carolina is a city with essentially half of Rochester's population, but it's got a really strong, highly recognized set of restaurants. And I'm not just talking about restaurants with $28 a plate. I'm talking about interesting food culture at every level. Kansas City, Charleston, South Carolina. How do you become that? And are we close? And that was interesting. And so when I think about where we are as Rochester, Finger Lakes, the region, not just the high end, but the whole culture, I think of, you know, how we recognize ourselves and how the world might recognize us and whether the world knows or cares about us. And I'm curious to know what you think the role here. So let me ask Adam first, what's the goal of this newly relaunched Rochester Food Net?
Well, I haven't thought about it in terms of how it's going to contribute to the city becoming something. For me, I want RochesterFoodNet.com to be the destination for food curious people in the area. It's sort of that simple. I haven't really thought about it beyond that.
I think that's a great description. Yeah. Vince, what do you think?
I think it's a collection of people who know what they're talking about, are good writers, well-traveled, more than just Instagram photos and a place to go beyond what has become the norm of pretty pictures.
Okay. Chris?
Yeah, when I look at some of the other cities, particularly like Buffalo, since it's so close, and how they've sort of revitalized and risen up from the ashes of being the Rust Belt city that struggled, I think it's the people who are local, who are celebrating local culture. And it's not even necessarily just food. It might be the music scene. There's a whole bunch of things. And I think when you look at cities that are starting to revitalize themselves and renovate their culture, it's the people who are celebrating it and contributing those things with social media. So I think one of the things that you mentioned that I was really hanging on is what it means for us as a city. And I think one of the things we struggle with in Rochester is creating our identity of who we are, not even just when it comes to food, but period. I mean, some people will include Canandaigua or Geneva in the greater Rochester region. And I don't think we have a lot of other cities in other parts of the country that that struggle with that. So is Rochester a Western New York city, or are we a Finger Lakes city? And I think some of the food and how we celebrate those foods, I think will ultimately affect our personal identity.
Mm. Karen, what do you think?
Yeah, I have to echo what all three of these guys just said. But it's really, my goal is to help people really recognize and appreciate what this area has to offer in terms of, you know, what our farmers bring to bear, food producers local to the area bring to bear. You know, we have some amazing chefs in the area. And a lot of people who are new to the area, even people who are not new to the area, don't recognize the wealth of food options that we have available to us, resources that we have available to us. So, you know, my goal in being a part of RochesterFoodNet.com is to help bring that to people who may not be aware of what we have, which is we're so rich in resources here in Rochester. And, you know, I want to make sure that people know that that stuff is out there and go and seek that stuff out.
Well, I want to talk to you about a piece you wrote about butter. Because I think this is a good example of what smart food writing looks like, at least from my perspective, because generally speaking, I think there are some people think that more expensive is good, whether it's wine or food or whatever. And sometimes that's true, but sometimes that's just not. Sometimes a $29 piece of chicken at a restaurant is just going to be totally unmemorable and you just burned some money, where what sets great restaurants or great cooking or great recipes a part is sort of the thoughtful attention to the little details. Because when someone drops off Christmas cookies, or this time of year that's happening all the time and I can't get away from them, the last thing I'm thinking is like, but what kind of butter did you use? Before you drop these on my desk, what kind of butter did you use? But I love this piece. Tell me about butter.
Sure. Well, so it used to be when I was young and poor, I would get the cheapest possible ingredients I could because I figured it didn't matter. Flour is flour and sugar is sugar. And for a lot of ingredients, that's true. But I've discovered that for butter, that is absolutely not true. That doesn't mean that cheap butter is a bad butter, but fresh butter is incredibly important, which is why so many people say, you know, go unsalted versus salted, because salted can sit on a shelf for months and months and may have, whereas unsalted will go bad quickly, which means that if you're buying unsalted, it's likely more fresh and it's going to, you know, you're going to end up with better results. So butter is one of those things that, you know, get the best butter you can possibly afford. It's worth it. It makes a difference. And then, of course, there's different types and styles of butter, and I talk about that a bit in the blog article, because the percentage of a butter fat makes a difference. And depending on what the application is and what you're cooking, you may want a higher butter fat or you may not want the higher butter fat. You may want the enzymes of a cultured butter or a European butter. You may not want that flavor in your dish. So choosing the right butter is going to make the difference in what you're cooking. And in some recipes, you know, maybe cheap butter's better. You know, I am opening that possibility. But I, in my own personal experience, the freshest, best butter you can afford is going to give you better cookies. And if you wonder what's the difference, why did this batch of cookies taste so much better when my mom made them than when I made them? It's the butter. Check the butter. That's probably why.
And you tell the story of your friend Mary Kay and her obsession.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about that.
So Mary Kay was my best friend my whole life. She passed away, it'll be 3 years ago in January. And she was dealing with cancer for a number of years and was trying to find ways to occupy her time that would keep her, entertained while she was, you know, going through cancer treatment. And one of those was baking. So she became obsessed with making croissants, and she wanted to make these perfect flaky chocolate croissants. And she was making like just copious amounts of croissants all the time, batches and batches and batches, and hated them, and it was all about the butter. She had to get the right butter. So she had people all over the city looking for plein gras, which was this butter that she was convinced was going to make the difference. And she found it, and that was it. That was it. She nailed it.
Plein gras.
It is a brand name of a European butter.
P-L-U-G-R-A.
Bingo. And you can now find it in Wegmans, and I'm convinced that Mary Kay is the reason. Because
Where's it from?
It's a European butter. I don't know, UK somewhere.
But you're saying you're gonna stand by plein gras.
For croissants, 100%. Yes. I don't know how well it works with everything else, yeah. But those croissants were just like life altering. They were so good, and that was it. She nailed it, and she stopped making croissants after that and moved on to the next thing.
You've reached the pinnacle.
That was it. Yes. Yeah. There was no need to continue.
You know, Evan, back to your chicken example. I am certain that La Olla Criolla is not using organic chicken, but their baked chicken is ridiculous. It is so good. Why?
Well, that's part of the job of people like Vince to figure that out. I mean, so why the subtle difference? I had a meal, and this must have been 5 years ago, 6 years ago, at Avino on Monroe Avenue, which I think is still there, but I've not been back in a long time.
Great spot.
And, you know, Janine was part of the original Food Net.
See, I'm not doing this just to sort of scratch people's backs. I didn't know. But I had a meal at Avino, and the bread was so good, I thought, their attention to detail on everything must be at the top, because if they care this much about the bread, it's going to be good. And it was a great meal.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. But the first thing I noticed was how phenomenal that bread was.
It's a good observation, though, because that does make the difference.
Yeah,
it's those little
telling.
Things.
And they are, Janine and Tim are as well-traveled restaurant ownership group as maybe anybody in the whole region. And that of course, helps, too, because you're constantly measuring everybody else in the world. You're coming back to Rochester, to your own little restaurant in Brighton, saying, what can we do better?
Yeah, and to me, that was like, that's what I thought of when I read Karen's piece. I thought that was like the Avino bread for me, like the butter, your plein gras. It's like, some people think it's not important, but it can make all the difference, and it's the attention to the detail. And so to Vince's point about, well, they're well-traveled. You know, they have a frame of reference. They're looking not only for ideas, but they're comparing what they do. When I was spending more time writing about the Finger Lakes wine scene, I was rather frequently surprised at how often either winemakers or winery owners, again, this is a general comment, not at all fully comprehensive, because there are many well-traveled people in the Finger Lakes wine region, and there are many more now than there were a decade ago when I was writing more. But sometimes they would say, you know, I mostly just drink my own stuff. Or, you know, I don't really have time to sort of like sample or taste compare. Then you would go and talk to winemakers who they're constantly comparing their stuff from around the world in different regions. And they're really sort of interesting and academic about it. And there was a significant difference, I thought. And I don't understand not wanting to have a frame of reference if you can get it. What do you think?
Agreed. Yeah, absolutely. I think when you open a restaurant, you either open it for the wrong reasons, you know, to employ your buddies or invite your family. And, you know, the things that everybody else sees, you don't see. You know, you stock your bar with Bud Light pint glasses, and you run to Michael's and you get centerpieces, and you get the smallest chicken breast or thigh possible just to save a little money. And all the things that, you know, that your patrons are going to notice and maybe not come back for, your mind is so wrapped around one thing only. So the detail of, I had a little detail moment, like the bread and the butter moment, when I was sitting at Vern's, a new place on Park Ave, and they have these lovely olives that they put out, amuse bouche almost, right? And they have these lemon zest in there, and the pith is removed completely, and the detail is exquisite. And I'm saying, who removes? And I asked John Swan, I said, I can't believe the detail in this lemon zest in your free olives. He said, no one's ever said that to me before. And I knew the rest of the meal was going to be great because of their attention to detail. He took time and had someone on his staff actually go through and do that.
See, Vince is jumping ahead in my notes, because after our only break of the hour, we're going to kind of get into some of his food reviews. I like the way you're doing it. You're kind of, it's kind of a catalog of where you've been and the experience you had.
Right.
Vern's was on the list. And if there was one knock at Vern's, which, by the way, I've been to once, your one sort of standout concern was exactly mine, which was that I was in a group and was told, if you're ordering plates, share the plates. And the plates came and I went, that is not enough gnocchi to share. I'm going to crush that gnocchi on my own. And everything was great. Everything was great, but it was hard to share.
Smaller plates. Yeah.
It was smaller plates. And so it might have just been sort of a problem with me being really hungry and not wanting to share.
Sure.
Because it was fantastic.
Yeah. And a very small knock there.
Yeah. I had a wonderful experience at Vern's. And it was really cool to see what they've done with that space. It was fun.
Right.
I dug it a lot.
The interior design prowess is outstanding, which you don't see in a lot of places. Somebody opens up and throws some chairs in and a coat of paint and calls it a day. And that is not what you see in some of these other cities we talk about, whether it's even Pittsburgh or Cleveland, if you want to stay in the Rust Belt.
Well, there's a lot of good things happening.
Fantastic things.
Yeah. And before we get that break, I want to ask Chris Clements a question because on my mind, this is the time of year where everyone's doing sort of their end of the year, whatever. And I wish, I don't know if Veronica Volk, who is, nope, she's not there. I'm looking through the glass at the newsroom and Veronica sits right over there. She's so much cooler than I am. And she posted something on Twitter that was really funny. And I don't think she created it. I think she linked to it, but it was like it was one of those bingo cards of if you're up and coming trendy cities, and it had, you know, espresso bars that don't have any, you know, options for sweet fruity lattes and stuff,
right.
And you know, craft beer bars and stuff. But I actually thought to myself, you know what? As much as that little bingo card was poking fun at the food and drink culture that's become a little bit homogenous in terms of what maybe millennials and Generation Z want. I also think it's not a bad thing. I actually thought of you because you're someone who travel. You have a sense for what is interesting and standout, whether it's Utica, Rome, Albany, Schenectady, Rochester, Buffalo, whatever. Yeah. And there are these little gem things about all these towns. But then there's also some homogenous things. Even when I was in Utica, there was an awesome little coffee bar that could have been here in Rochester, that could have been in Manhattan.
Which one?
I don't remember, unfortunately.
Coffee, maybe?
That sounds right. It wasn't far from the highway.
Right in downtown,
Yeah. It was really good. And it didn't bother me that I could have dropped it right in Rochester or could have dropped it in Manhattan.
Sure.
So I'm wondering to you, as we see certain trends happen, how much do you kind of roll your eyes and say, well, everybody's got a coffee bar like this, everybody's got a craft beer bar like this? Or do you think like, hey, no, that's cool, and we're going to have our own little flavor on it, but that just because all of these towns have this now doesn't mean it's a bad thing?
Yeah, no, I don't think it's a bad thing. When we're, I mean, if you look at something that's, for instance, like a national brand or even a local chain like Stewart's, where you can find exactly the same thing in certain regions, I don't think that you're finding coffee shops just because they all have Edison bulbs and reclaimed barnwood shelves that are doing exactly the same thing. And well, I do think one of the things that's unique about, just since we've mentioned coffee shops, is that we have a lot of roasters in our region, especially in Western New York. Mm-hmm. We have a lot of roasters. So even if you're looking at similar build outs in terms of a physical space that cafes are filling, they do all have very different things. And I, again, speaking specifically to coffee, I think the culture of the coffee roasters and the cafes locally definitely supports one another. And I think collectively they are trying to bring each other together so that even they recognize as small business owners that it's no big deal if you've all got reclaimed barnwood shelves because we've all got something that's a little bit unique.
Well, it's funny because, Chris, your article that's up on RFN right now is instructive here. So Chris recoils from trendiness to a certain extent. Is that fair?
It depends on the trend, I guess.
Right. But in some cases.
I have a tendency to be skeptical.
Right. So the tack he took when talking about, say that three times fast, tack he took when talking about katbucha, coffee kombucha.
Right.
It was, wow, you know, this is really a collision of two uber trendy things and I'm going to hate it. And then you didn't.
I didn't hate it at all. I surprised myself. They surprised me. I've always struggled and I've been very public about this when I've talked about food. I don't understand the kombucha thing. And I've likened it to fine art. And I did it in that article where I'm standing in a fine art studio looking at art, and everybody around is saying, oh, this is so inspirational. It's so incredible.
Tell them about art.
It's wonderful. And I'm standing there thinking, like, what's broken in my brain? That what's wrong with me that I don't get what all these other people get? And I've had that experience with a lot of kombuchas, that people are like, this is amazing, and I feel so much healthier, and my gut is so much healthier. And I'm not sure I got it. But when Katbucha, who was one of the first kombucha producers in Rochester, teamed up with Joe Bean Coffee and used their Ethiopian coffee and created a coffee kombucha, I was thinking, like, I don't know how this could be good, but it ended up being really great in spite of my own skepticism.
It does sound terrible.
And that's one of the things that—
I'm going to try
it. That's one of the things that threatens my optimism when it comes to trends, that I think, like, who sat down and thought this was a great idea? But if you look at it, and I don't know how we can do a full hour of food without mentioning this, so I need to. Somebody probably thought the idea of the garbage plate was terrible when they first put that together, but they were wrong because it's incredible.
It is.
So
a lot of these things are happy accidents.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think that's really cool that Katbucha moved the needle for you a little bit there.
Yeah, totally.
And
she thinks it's cool too.
I suspect she definitely thinks it is very cool. And after our only break of the hour, well, let's hit Tom's question on Twitter. Well, what if you're swinging a miss in terms of restaurant review does severe damage to a small local restaurant? Okay, we'll talk about that. Ryan on Twitter says, I would agree that Rochester is a Finger Lakes city, and wants to know if the website's going to cover down into places like Naples. Hollerhorn has a great story. We'll let the crew hit that when we come back. We're talking to the team, and this is just part of the team. Adam Wilcox, Karen Cross-Smith, Chris Clemens, Vince Press, part of the team of the revamped Rochester Food Net. It's rochesterfoodnet.com, and they are proud to be back, not only really sort of regularly contributing, but expanding what they do with reviews, feature writing, video, interviews, and a lot more. So much more with them, and we'll answer some of your questions next on Connections. This is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson, talking about the newly relaunched rochesterfoodnet.com, and Joseph on Twitter says, Evan tuned in late. A question. This conversation seems to be quite upper class. Much of this quality food and drink is quite expensive, no? Is this stuff accessible to the masses, or will it forever remain chic and distinct? Now, the garbage plate, on the other hand. So, Joseph, let me just sort of hit it from the perspective of the host first, because what I don't want is Connections to become just a small niche program. And we can cover high-end. We can cover everything in between. But my own perspective on this is, I will return, Joe, to the comment I made earlier, which is sometimes people think quality just means expensive. Sometimes people think a quality restaurant is $30 a plate and therefore it must be good, or an expensive wine must be good because you paid a lot for it, when some of the very best stuff is not. It is thoughtful. It is rustic. I mean, there's a term that I don't know how people feel about the term peasant food anymore, but that's a term that has a connotation that I actually find very positive. It usually means very resourceful, creative, some of the best recipes. When you go to Europe, that's a term you hear a lot. So it's not meant to be exclusive, though I do understand some of that concern. And some of the, different people have sort of different views on what exclusive may mean. But Adam, as the chef de cuisine and the founder?
Yeah, if I were the only writer on the site, it would be nothing but cheap ethnic places that have outhouses instead of interior bathrooms, because that's how I roll. And one of the things I was hoping we would have is a diversity of opinions here. Vince is definitely going to be covering more of the more expensive kinds of places. I would think Amanda will probably do that too. Although we're waiting to see what Amanda's going to do. I like to go to cheap places. I'm kind of cheap myself. And I go out, and if when I go to an expensive place, I hold it up to the Rocco bar, It's like, okay, was this more than Rocco? Why am I not at Rocco? But
that's really, really funny and really good.
But
that's
all my great, favorite restaurants except Rocco are cheap. The places I go the most are like Ming's and Flavors of Asia. And Flavors of Asia, I wouldn't say that anything they do is really sublime, but everything they do is pretty darn good, and it's really cheap.
Well, you mentioned La Ola Criolla, too.
That place is incredible.
For $7, you can have meals that you'll still be eating the next day.
Yeah, and the food is fantastic.
Outstanding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Every bite of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so, I hear you. I love guacamole in East Rochester, where for about $6 or $8, you get about 6 or 8 meals, based on how much you want to eat. I hear that. I mean, what do you think, Vince? What would you say to that?
I'm always in search of fantastic food, no matter the setting.
Yeah.
I ate pho in a little divey place off of Lyle Ave yesterday for lunch, and that's great. I love the places Adam does.
Every
it doesn't
time.
Have to be highbrow whatsoever, as long as they're doing it well.
Yeah, absolutely. And Karen, when it comes to great recipes and great food prep, it is not always the most expensive.
Absolutely. I learned to love cooking at my grandmother's knee. And my grandmother was, you know, a Depression era, came over on the boat from Sicily. Everything was cheap, cheap. So, when she was making her pasta, we would have eggs in the pasta, hard-boiled eggs in the pasta instead of meat, because that's what they could afford in Sicily at the time. So I grew up with an appreciation of that peasant cooking that you referred to, Evan, which is, how can we feed this family a nutritious meal on, $1.50?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of my favorite cuisines are, I guess, what you'd call peasant cuisines that are very old in the world, whether it's Indian or various Middle Eastern cuisines, where, poor people had to make do with what they had, dried ingredients, milk that had gone bad. That's one of my cracks about Indian food. Well, what can we do with the spoiled milk today? And Indian food has so many interesting ways of dealing with intentionally spoiled milk. A great story I like is about the Middle Eastern grain called freaky. Are you familiar with freaky?
I'm not.
Well, who doesn't want to say freaky? Right, freaky is green wheat. And the history of freaky is that people were starving. It was too early in the growing season. They'd run out of food from last year. So they're like, gosh, the wheat isn't mature yet. What are we going to do? Well, let's burn it and see what happens. They burned it down. They used the smoky hulls inside the husks. And they make this, nutty, smoky, rice-like thing called freaky. And it's amazing, but it wouldn't have happened with rich people. it just couldn't have happened.
That's a great point. So let's just talk a little bit about reviews. And Vince, why don't you start by telling us, before we get to Tom's question, the way you've structured them. As I'm reading it, you did your November review where you look back at places you went in November and you gave us
sarcastic snippets, I call it, of just, instead of one full review. So for years, oddly and ironically, I remember at the DNC, I pitched them my best of column 8 years ago, and I had to beg them to write it. They said, "Do people really want to know where to get the best steaks or the best meatballs?" I said, "Yeah," and then now, of course, everybody has top 10 lists, and so I wrote happy, positive stuff for years and enjoyed it. But the real critical me has come out in this, where I think you can go and have a great meal, as we talked about Vern's. But you want to say a couple things about it, whether it was a service or a dirty bathroom or the flatware they were using. And so that's the whole theory.
Which he's just giving examples. He's not talking about Vern's.
But correct. Yes.
That's right. Yeah.
Correct. But you always have a criticism. And for years when I was writing the happy stuff, owners and readers would come to me and say, "Guy, I wish you were a little more critical." And so it was the restaurant owners and my readership who actually causing, you said you had a tweet where somebody said, "Hey, do you feel guilty if something negatively influences a place?"
Well, I think the implication is that it can hurt a small business.
And I think it can. I don't think it will. I think, if anything, from what I've heard from owners and chefs, is that they want to hear that to improve. And so I don't think that one negative comment will do that. I hope. It seems as the places we've talked about, many people go and have a very bad chicken sandwich or bad service and go right back the next week. And so I'm not convinced that one bad review or negative review will hurt a place.
Yeah, and you close with just the addendum to your piece says the following, and I'm going to edit just for air.
Okay.
If you're angry about anything written in this candid blog, be angry at yourself and fix it. That's your admonition too.
Yeah, that's a bold. That was a bold.
But the point being, view criticism as an opportunity to grow.
Right, I think so.
Well, yeah. And I, You were talking a little bit about what's changed over the last 10 years in terms of editing. One of those things, obviously, online reviews, and I will say the four-letter word Yelp. And I think that there are some people who don't necessarily have an objective background or an effort towards trying to elevate that local culture. I think there are some people who go someplace and they're ticked off because of one very specific thing. And you have to remember that sometimes there might be a wait staff who just broke up with their significant other and they're having a terrible day, or the chef might be fighting a cold and they're having a terrible day. So I'd like to think that someone who's writing a true objective review is taking into account that sometimes things happen, and just because this one particular thing is a criticism doesn't mean this place is terrible and it should close and deserve to go out of business. The objective criticisms are an opportunity for people to say, this is an area that we can improve.
This is probably its whole separate discussion just on service, because listening to this program right now are probably many people who have worked serving tables at some point in their life, if they're not doing it as a career now.
Sure.
But as an example, Chris, to kind of build on that theme, I had a friend recently say, I went to such and such new restaurant. I won't mention it because I'm not going to mention it. Said, the food was okay. The service was bad. And I said, so what? And they said, what do you mean? And I said, well, so what? And they said, well, that place has bad service. I said, don't do that.
Yeah, it isn't that
one person who works for a restaurant that might have dozens of people was not pleasant to you. And that's a problem. And there has to be a culture of good service. I agree.
Sure.
But you have no idea what happened in that person's day.
Totally.
And you don't know if every other server is going to treat you that way. And it is very dangerous to kind of then say, well, that place has bad service as like a fixed attribute.
Totally.
As opposed to one experience. Go back.
Agreed.
And if it happens two or three times. Now, if the food is not good, that's a different thing. But I think we got to be careful. Then again, I'm probably going to get yelled at in email, edaustin@wxxi.org, servers and former servers, to tell me I'm either right or wrong about that. But I know you wanted to add to this.
I do. So one of the things we were talking about before we went on the air was the idea that we have veterans working on Rochester Food Net. And that's important because I think it takes a while to sort of develop credibility and to learn your craft at anything. And the craft of writing in public about people's businesses involves truth and fairness. And we're all gonna define those on our own scales. But anything that appears on the Food Net is going to have been seen by a second person on the team. And I think if any of us felt someone was being unfair, we'd say something, or untruthful. I didn't think there was anything untruthful or unfair that Vince said, not even close. Vince and Chris Lindstrom, both have a rep, especially Chris Lindstrom, for being pretty tough. Chris is very critical. But Chris knows what he's talking about, when he says, that pernil wasn't this or that. It's because Chris has eaten a lot of pernil and done a bunch of research, and he knows what he's talking about. When someone goes on Yelp and says, I don't think this Vietnamese food is authentic, my red lights go off, and I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? Where are you coming from? Who are you? And what the hell does authentic mean? That, is anything authentic anymore in this global world we live in? Everything is a melange. So it's all a matter of being truthful and being fair. When I wrote my column for City way back in the day, I would eat twice at a restaurant at least, and then I would interview them. And my rule for myself was if I was going to say it in print, I had to be able to say it to their face. Now, that's not something most food critics do. And I'll tell you, it makes it really hard to manage sometimes.
That's a really good personal standard, by the way.
Well, one thing it's led to is I have a rep for being nice. And I probably am too nice. But that's where my needle is.
But that standard, as we go into 2020, should apply to all social media interaction. Do not say or tweet something that you would not say to somebody's face.
And that's the problem with our social media society, isn't it? Because we don't have to say anything to anyone's face. But if you can't, you got to ask yourself, why am I saying this?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. So can I ask Vince, can we run down real quick the restaurants you've been to just to kind of give a little flavor? It's called Mouth to Mouth, by the way. Mouth to Mouth is Vince's monthly sort of wrap up of the place.
Yeah,
went
a little
to.
Double entendre there.
So St. Paul proper in Rochester.
Yep, that was it's a new bar right there next to Tapas. I think early 1900s space. Pretty good. Trying to be kind of a gastro pubby. They did some things well. They did some things you could tell were cost saving measures, but they're. You know, I think their intentions are great, and I think it will thrive.
You closed with, for Christ's sake, open up for lunch in a neighborhood that needs it.
Yeah, that would be good. I think that's one thing, you know, I get it. It's hard to open a restaurant.
So hard to do lunch downtown.
It's so hard to do lunch anywhere in the city. It is tough.
It is tough, and a lot of places decide not to do lunch or do lunch and then stop doing lunch, yeah. But it's a good marketing tool to do lunch.
Fifth Frame has lunch there, don't they?
They do. Here?
Yeah.
Yep. Same
right
block.
In the same neighborhood.
I mean, we all want more lunch places, but we sure. also don't manage the books. Old Pueblo Grill, which just as my own little confession, I routinely now like schedule if I've got to meet with somebody, we're going to Old Pueblo.
It's great.
So good.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Do
and
you
Joe,
still have to wait a long
yeah, it's
time?
Busy. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and it's telling because they're doing a fantastic job, yeah. And Joe from Nosh knows his stuff unbelievably well, and I think
is it the same ownership?
Yeah, I think it's the same.
Okay.
I don't know exactly, but yeah, same ownership. And I think my only knock there was just put something interesting on that menu, like tongue or something other than the standard lunch crowd desires.
Yeah,
and that was it.
You like what you got. You want them to be a little bit more daring.
Yeah, a little daring.
Okay. We've talked about Vern's. Pittsford Pub you loved?
Well, I live right by it, and boy, they could be, like I said, they could be so much more. I've been to taverns that were mind-blowing in some of these other cities, and... You know, people, as a general rule, they leave there and say it's just mediocre, and it could be so much more. It really could.
Szechuan Opera in Rochester.
Yeah, that's a newcomer. It used to be a pizza place on Park Ave. I think we all went there as a group.
We did.
Yeah, it's fantastic and spicy, and they have intestine and all types of other animal parts on the menu if you want to go in that direction, and it's real deal stuff.
Yeah, I had a friend from out of town visiting who asked for a recommendation in this sort of genre food, which is not my expertise, and a friend recommended Szechuan, and he said, phenomenal.
Great.
Loved yeah, it. Loved yeah. it. Jack's on Water Street?
Yeah, that's a newcomer too, right? Yep. Over there in Water Street Music Hall, and it's pretty good. He's got some guys from the West Coast, and it's a very small menu. And again, I think he's taking baby steps when he should go full in and let the world know that he's there. Otherwise, you might not have enough time. So I think there's some improvements to be made there, but he spent some money and redid the interiors, and you should go try it.
And Tony D's.
Love Tony D's. Jay does a phenomenal job there. I think it's better than it was. I understand he's having a big blowout for New Year's Eve. And the stuff is just great, and it's big portions, and I can't say enough about it. He knows his stuff and cares about everything on the menu.
Pete Wells, the New York Times food writer for many years, wrote a piece a couple years back now in which he referred to one of the dishes at Per Se as having evoked bong water.
I remember.
one of the most highly regarded restaurants in the world, and he...
That's not a compliment, is it?
It is not. He no. destroyed it, and it was the talk of the food world. What would it take for you to describe something as bong water or a cousin of bong water? How blunt do you want to be? Are you willing to go there?
I love that line. Well, I did say, you know, I was very critical of Duff's, our incarnation of Duff's here, and I said that the sign was off at night and maybe it should stay off. And so, you know, I said that, even though I love Duff's in Buffalo, the original Amherst location is phenomenal and great.
Agreed.
But they have not recreated it. So that was my bong water comment in this article.
That's fair. Now,
So far.
Yeah. Real briefly here, 30 seconds apiece. What are you most looking forward to writing or seeing from Rochester Food Network? Karen?
Oh, good God.
What are you working on? What's fun?
I just wrote a new article about soup clubs, because that seems to be an upcoming trend, and I've been speaking to some local people who are partaking of soup clubs. And
are we a soup club?
No.
No, that's not what that means.
We're a dinner club. Okay. But a soup club, I think it's kind of a cool idea, so I'm going to share that idea with people.
Okay, Chris?
With 2019, we saw the demise of both Hart's and Scott's II, and we lost two of the best breakfast sandwiches in Rochester, in my opinion, and I think in many others' opinions. So I'm going to spend much of 2020 trying to find the best breakfast sandwich.
So that's actually going to be a collaborative one, right?
Yeah. We're all going to be each month going to the same place, and we're all going to be rating it and collecting all of our reviews and data. Hoping to find the next one. Yeah,
that is such a good idea. I cannot tell you how many people.
It's his idea.
Do you want in?
I'm not a breakfast sandwich connoisseur. I would not be qualified.
At least 1 month.
Come eat a sandwich with us, Evan.
I'll have a sandwich.
Okay.
I'll think about it. Okay, okay. Vince Press.
Next column, I'm going to venture out a little bit to Genesee County and Livingston and the Finger Lakes and divulge some of the finds out there.
By the way, that question before the break on Twitter asking if Rochester Food Net's going to cover into the Finger Lakes. Yes? No?
I'm going to a new place in Mount Morris on Sunday. I was going to ask if you guys wanted me to write. But yeah, whatever we feel like.
Yeah, we are. I mean, Michael Warren Thomas obviously covers the Finger
Lakes.
He is
the man.
He's an integral part of what we're doing here. So yes.
Okay, very good. Okay.
Yeah, can't wait.
All right. And what's exciting to you?
I'm going to revive something I briefly did at City, which was called Lunch with Blank, where I take somebody I find interesting out, or they take me out. They pick the place. And we talk about both the place and the person.
That is such a scam.
Isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to create a piece where I get someone to take me out to lunch.
I meant it in the sense that they pick, not that they pay.
As the billionaire founder.
As the billionaire founder.
of the Rochester Food Net. I'm sure you can handle it. But most billionaires are cheap. Well.
That's how they get there.
I want to congratulate you on the work here because I do know it is Herculean and it can be really... tough. It could be a grind.
Oh, Sean McKay. I want to give Sean McKay a shout out. He's our web guy, our SEO guy. He's the guy who's going to make it work financially.
No pressure, Sean McKay. That's really awful that you just did that to him. I want to thank the entire team of the Rochester Food Net. Adam Wilcox, congratulations on this. Thanks for being here. Vince, thanks. Let's talk more.
Absolutely.
Vince
thank
Press, food reviewing and more there. Chris Clemens from Exploring Upstate, now contributing here. Great having you. Thank you.
Yeah, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you. And Karen Cross-Smith, looking forward to more of your work as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
Short break. More connections coming up.